And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe DeLeon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
I'm doing good, Blake. It's been kind of fun seeing all these announcements for when games are supposed to kick off and all these reminders of where their big matchups are during various weeks. I know we're going to talk about week one on today's show, but we're far away, but we're also really close to the season starting. That's kind of where my head's been at.
Well, I don't know about you. However, when August gets here for me, football season is here for me.
Yeah.
You know, like when camps start opening up, SEC, Big Ten media days start opening up, that's when it really starts. You know, all this stuff that's coming out there today, like as an example, I don't know if you saw Jim Phillips's comments about ESPN not wanting to go to 24, wanting to stay at 12, at max go to 16. Greg Sankey is over there in the corner saying, thank you, ESPN. Thank you for saving me yet again. But regardless of that, like all of this offseason talk stops. As soon as these media days are over and really the season starts kicking away. Joe, we're not that far off. I mean, 2 months from now, we're going to be at media days. And here we go. I mean, the season's starting here. Like this is the kickoff and we're off to the races.
Yeah, it's slowly starting to creep up on us, which is kind of what I'm getting at here. I always get juiced up when we start to see the, again, I get whenever they start posting, ESPN starts posting about when certain games are going to be played in the various weeks and unveiling their schedules and whatnot. That's the early initiator for me, because then we can like really start talking about games to know, games to watch. But you're right. We're not far removed from media days happening, which is coming up in July. And we're going to just be in the thick of it, full steam ahead, all prediction season. And we can just focus on finally the season. So that's the bit for me. We're close.
We are getting very close, and it's going to be very fun, and we're obviously excited for a new college football season because, well, what's the truth, Joe? I mean, that's our baby. Did you think of Jim Phillips? Very quickly, I didn't ask you about this, not to do a whole segment on this. Were there any thoughts that you had on Jim Phillips's comments in the ACC meetings this week?
I was in meetings the entire day, so I didn't see – I kept getting in meetings that went 30 minutes long, so I didn't see anything that he said.
Basically what he said, just to let you know, that they're going to support a 24-team playoff and that ESPN does not want to go to 24 teams.
I mean, that's what we've been harping on. So to have somebody who doesn't want to have another commissioner say they don't want to go to 24, I'd much rather stick at 12.
Well, no, he said he wants to go to 24. ESPN doesn't want to go to 24.
Okay. Well,
I mean the way that I see this is that he's just flip-flopping. I mean, of course, Joe, of course, you have a situation right now where the Big 12 and ACC want to flip this and want more of an expansion. They get more teams in. I understand that you want more teams into the playoff, because it makes your conference more money. And let's just be blunt, you don't want to be the Pac-12. The more money that the conference can get and give to the teams that are in that conference, the likelihood of them dissolving starts going away. So why not expand it? I understand it. But Jim Phillips, who said today that he wants a 2014 playoff, the Big 12, who also, and Brett Yormark, who's come out and said he wants a 2014 playoff, you're not doing that for the best of the sport like you're insinuating. You're doing that for the best of you. You've always looked at what's in the best of you. So is it the best thing for the sport or is it the best thing for you? Because the ACC didn't need a 2014 playoff last year to get a team in. It was your crazy rules on what happened in your own conference for rule ties and breaks why Miami didn't get into the ACC championship game to start off with. So again, these smaller conferences are starting to think that they have a voice, but ESPN's coming out saying, yeah, no, we're not backing that. And I hope that ESPN's weight says, yeah, we're not doing that. So if we don't back it, where's the money going to come from?
Yeah, because I mean, I don't.
They have the exclusive rights for the college football playoff. So if they're not going to give any more money, mm-hmm. then what's the expansion for to start off with?
Right. I mean, that's if there's no money behind it, then there's no expansion coming. I didn't have any time to prep anything on this, so I don't really have much to add. But if ESPN doesn't want to pay for it, then nothing's coming of it. Nothing.
We'll see. We'll see. But Greg Sankey's the happiest man on the planet. Nevertheless, we are live. In case you missed it, in case you've been under a rock during the offseason, Joe and I have made a little bit of a move. We're glad to be powered and partnered by good friends over at 24/7 Sports. And whatever team that you follow, we highly suggest that you go over to your favorite team's site today. You can use the promo code RJ60 at checkout. That's RJ60. You get 60% off of your annual VIP membership. We've already brought up our good friends like Neil McCready. You got Bucknuts, a lot of really good sites that are on the 24/7 platform. So go over there today. Use the annual VIP membership promo code of RJ60 at checkout. You'll get 60% off of your order. And Joe, I got to tell you, you know, it's really propelled me and helped me to see what fans are thinking over the 24/7 boards because, you know, we're doing a Kentucky deep dive today. Got to see what's going on with Kentucky. I have gotten more knowledge, by the way, of what individual fan bases think of a 2014 playoff than ever before being over there. So I'm glad to be powered and partnered by our good friends over at 24/7. And I highly suggest that you guys do the same as well. All right, let's get into the show here, Joe. So the top three games going into week one. So ESPN has come out and stated that they are going to Baton Rouge in week one. They're obviously going to Texas for week two in Ohio State versus Texas. And I'm sure everybody knows where they're going to be going. Joe, what game in week three on September 19th do you think ESPN is going to go to?
Right.
Come on. But with that being said, week one kicking off, they are going to Baton Rouge. So there are a lot of really interesting matchups in week one. Joe, what are the top three matchups that you're looking forward to in week one?
The three for me that I'm the most locked in on is that Clemson LSU game, Ole Miss versus Louisville. And I actually am more intrigued by Miami versus Stanford than I am to bring up Notre Dame versus Wisconsin.
I'm glad you said that because I was worried you were going to talk about Lambeau for 30 minutes.
No, I wasn't. I'm actually, there's a strong chance of going to that game and I'm going to be at that game. But dude, I think that Notre Dame is going to completely work Wisconsin. I don't think that the game is going to be very competitive or entertaining to watch unless Luke Fickell has something up his sleeve that we're not expecting that we haven't seen before. But we kind of have an understanding of what Notre Dame is going to be this year. There aren't really many new variables that are going to be unveiled in that first game against Wisconsin. It'll just be nice beating the crap out of another team in a Power Four conference. That'll be nice for Notre Dame fans, but there's not much that we can learn. Miami versus Stanford, on the other hand, which is not a Saturday game, so it's one of the earlier games that I'm going to be locked in on. I believe it's one of the Friday games. I want to see what Darian Mensah looks like in the system. I want to see how he's going to look in this offense. Now, a lot of other things, there's a lot of returning players that we've talked about time and time again, but man, how is Mensah going to start off his time leading this Miami offense? Is he going to start off with a bang? Is he going to throw for 300 yards and three touchdowns against a team that they should completely dominate? Are there any growing pains? Do they struggle a little bit out the gate? Like, how is this going to look? I'm paying closer attention to narratives. I'm not so much looking for what is going to be the tightest, most entertaining game out of all of these, because at the end of the day, Blake, this is not our typical super, super exciting week one slate that we've gotten over the past couple of years. I would actually argue that all these games are kind of duds for a typical week one slate, but that Miami Stanford game at least has some intrigue because we get to learn about what this offense could be with a completely different style of quarterback.
Can I bring something up to your attention? Mm-hmm. You're about to get mad at me, but you can't get mad at me on Ben's birthday, my son. So remember okay. that. Name the most intriguing Big Ten game in week one.
I don't believe that they have one. What is this? Why are you doing this?
Because again, I keep bringing up, what is the Big Ten's argument going to be when the SEC, now that they're at 9 conference games, and you have LSU versus Clemson, you have Texas versus Ohio State, you have Ole Miss versus Louisville. What is your excuses now? So when we get to media days, by the way, I'm just throwing this out there. The Big Ten, you don't have one real true intriguing game outside of Ohio State and Texas. Not really. You have Michigan and Oklahoma. Sounds good. Where's the other conferences? Where's Oregon? Where's the national champion in Indiana? So everything that you just said, you talked about Notre Dame. You talked about the ACC in Miami, but they have to go on the road. By the way, they didn't lead the state of Florida for the first week, 6 weeks of the season last year. You're not even talking about the game. You're talking about an individual player and Darian Mensah that you're looking forward to. The two games, the two real premier games, really you could say three, come from the SEC. Auburn and Baylor, LSU and Clemson, and Ole Miss and Louisville. Now, Notre Dame and Wisconsin 5, 6, 7 years ago in Lambeau would have been landmark, if we're being honest. A potential Big Ten title contender versus Notre Dame would have absolutely been a profile headline type of game. But because of the Wisconsin struggles, Wisconsin's the only team in the Big Ten that has a premier matchup, and they're not even premier anymore. So if you wanted me to rank these teams or rank these games, I do think at number one it is LSU versus Clemson. I talked about and previewed this game last night, Joe, ironically. I think Baton Rouge is going to be absolutely rocking. I think because of the calendar year that LSU has struggled with in athletics, you had the Brian Kelly firing. You're coming off of a national title in LSU baseball, but the season has kind of fallen by the wayside. You had to go get Will Wade, and you fired Mac McMahon. Men's basketball has been really bad. I think they want to go off in there week one versus Clemson with Lane Kiffin in the new era and make that place shake like they've done before. I think it is the by far most intriguing matchup. But, Joe, I also ask this question, what is Clemson? Like, is that our most intriguing matchup? You know, last year, LSU versus Clemson, we thought potentially those could be two playoff teams, right? Yeah. Like, that was the narrative, that those could be two playoff teams. Joe, you got 11 people defensively that are through the portal. By the way, did you know Dabo grabbed 11 players from the portal defensively? A lot have potential. None have production. Will Health is the most productive dude in their front seven, not named Sammy Brown. So even though I think it's intriguing to see how LSU looks, and I think Baton Rouge is going to be rocking, I think it's going to be one of the deadliest atmospheres in all of next year or this upcoming year in general, just based off of what LSU wants to do. But man, I think some of these games are going to be, I don't know how close some of these games may be, Joe. So I would go one LSU versus Clemson. But man, I don't know if I wouldn't put Ole Miss versus Louisville.
Before we move on to that, I want to chime in on the LSU versus Clemson matchup. Okay. You talked a little bit about how different things are right now with Dabo, and we don't really know what to expect from this Clemson team.
No,
I think
don't.
Purely from a narrative standpoint, what is really compelling about this game is how directly related it is to all the problems that we've discussed the entire offseason and recently with college football. It could not be a better example with these two teams than everything that we have endured recently. You have Lane Kiffin, who is dominating headlines in the offseason for things that he said. He has been talked about since he took the job at LSU for every little thing that he's done. It has been under a microscope. And he has been a coach that has been extremely successful through building teams with the transfer portal. And that's what he's doing right now with this LSU team. There's going to be a lot of emphasis on how he plays in this game. If they lose, there's going to be a lot of pressure. If they win close, there's going to be a lot of pressure. If they dominate and they blow them out, the hype is going to start to build and a lot of people are going to get really excited. There is zero chance that there's an outcome on the LSU side of things that there is a level-headed response on either side. But the reason why I'm saying that this kind of encapsulates everything that's happening with college football right now is that you've got the biggest name in the sport coming into his new job. You have the former biggest name in the sport who might be on the way out. And this could be the beginning of the end for Dabo Swinney, who has been nothing but stubborn about trying to be caught up with the modern version of college football. Have you also noticed, by the way, we haven't talked a lot about some of the quotes that Dabo's had. I feel like every week for the past month, maybe longer than that, there has been a different quote from him from a different interview that he's done. He's become the most quotable coach in the worst way possible at the worst time possible. We talk a lot about Lane and the things that he says. Dabo's not controversial, but my goodness, Dabo can't stop talking. Dabo can't keep his mouth shut, and he keeps saying things that are just adding to, piling onto the collective problems that have held him back. He's commenting on like roster development and how he builds his teams, and he's sticking to his guns, which is so stupid. So, like, this game has two different coaches who get talked about a ton for completely different reasons. I'm really interested to see what the aftermath of this game is going to be like, because there could be a lot of toxicity, or not could be, there will be a lot of toxicity that comes out of it.
Have you noticed some of the things that he's said and stated in reference to what they used to do in the past?
Yeah.
He was like, we won two national titles versus Alabama. We've done this. We won the ACC. Well, and? Like, what's your point? You didn't want to go in the portal. You just had to go and get 11 guys on defense from the portal. And yet you don't know what this is about. Now, can I tell you what actually worries me more than anything is that Dabo actually had to go in the portal and it might work for him. I mean, what if the opposite happens? What if he actually, because I don't think that they're bad at scouting and development. They're not bad at scouting. What if they do hit? But Joe, there's no level of production. By the way, in that game, preview-wise, do you know anything about their offensive line? I mean, their offense.
That is going to be a weird preview when we do it.
It's going to be a very weird preview. But here's the thing. Do you know about Prince Will? Do you know about Jordan Ross? Do you know about Jordan Seaton? Do you know about Bo Borderlon or Ball or Weston Davis? Do you know about the wide receivers? I mean, like, ironically, you know more about LSU than you do about Clemson. And Joe, like, the 10.5 point spread on that game, like, it is what it is. But there are games, like, we've talked about this in the 4 years that we've done this, okay? Mm-hmm. There are games, like, I just feel like nobody can walk off into Baton Rouge and win. Like, it doesn't matter what you do. I think those are one of these games. I think the atmosphere completely takes hold of the entire situation because of how angry that place is right now and how much they're yearning for a winner. I just think LSU is ultimately more talented, but it is going to be the premier matchup in week one, even though I don't know on the field if it's the most intriguing game to me because I don't know if Ole Miss Louisville isn't. I'm not 1,000% sold. Sorry to cut you off. No. I'm not 1,000% sold that Louisville doesn't put up more of a fight against Ole Miss than what Clemson does against LSU, ironically.
I do agree with you that I think that the Louisville-Ole Miss game has my attention because we don't know how much of a – like how much control – control is not the right word – how this Pete Golding era is going to start.
Mm-hmm.
Louisville is going to be a competitive matchup. It is going to be a tough team for them to go to war with. But at the same time, It is also a team that they should beat. This is a game that they should win. We're assuming that Louisville will be one of the top teams in the ACC this upcoming year. They also have a lot of roster turnover. Lincoln Kynels is taking over a quarterback after Miller Moss was decent a year ago. But is this going to be a situation where the feeling out of being a first-time head coach with getting a competitive, tough opponent for your first game, how does that look? Pete Golding's not getting McNeese State. He's not getting to play Southeastern Louisiana. He's not playing Missouri State. He's not playing an FCS program.
Why you got to take shots at Southeastern?
I'm just naming FCS programs.
Why couldn't you go for Rhode Island?
Because Rhode Island's not coming down. They don't play these Southern teams. They don't. We only play, for some reason, we only play MAC teams. We played Virginia Tech when I was there. We played Kansas when I was there. We played Temple this upcoming year. Played Minnesota too. But that's not the point of what I'm getting at here. You don't have a couple of games to work through the processes, like the simple things, how you prepare for games, how you operate on the sideline, how you operate with special teams and getting guys onto the field. Those, it might sound like I'm just making up a bunch of things, but we've seen coaches blunder this. Marcus Freeman was awful at this at the beginning of his time at Notre Dame. First time he was ever head coach, he was terrible at managing in-game and also game preparation pieces. We've learned that he's a great coach and he had to learn on the job. So are we going to get any of that in this first game? He's going to be thrown into the water. This isn't like a true crazy test, but I think that this is the game that I am the most intrigued by, because I think that there's a large opportunity here to potentially get to see if that there could be headaches or if they're ready to hit the ground running.
Can I bring up another reason?
Yep.
Who was one of the two losses that Miami had last season?
Two losses SMU. Was Louisville and SMU.
Do people not realize how good of a play caller Jeff Brohm really is? Like, hold on, pause, time. Remember that Miami team that went to a national title? Remember that secondary and defensive line that everybody said was, I mean, really gave Indiana all they can handle. Joe, they're a touchdown away from winning that game. Like, people forget that they're a touchdown away from beating Indiana. They're on a drive down, going down the field to beat Indiana. Carson Beck throws a pick. That's, I mean, again, the most Carson Beck thing of all time. Jeff Brohm put them in a blender. He put that entire team in a blender. And if you're not prepared for what Louisville is going to throw at you, you can get beat. Now, the thing about this one that I also would counteract that in is that he's got a new quarterback. He's got new pieces on the offense. Does it take Louisville a couple of weeks to be able to get under their stride before they can go and knock off a team like this? Like, I would pick Ole Miss to win today. I don't think they're losing. Mm-hmm. But Brohm is such a very good play caller, Joe, that I'm just like, I know that he's going to get, like, he's not going to go in there and lay a dud. Like, he's going to be able to really call some really good defense or really good offense against Pete Golding, who's a defensive minded guy. And I think he's going to do fantastic. I think he's going to do what he always does. So that game to me is much more intriguing, because I think Brohm can, I don't think they win, but I think that they can keep that a little bit more competitive than maybe some would otherwise realize. So that would be my number two. Now, again, in reference to Ole Miss, and I know that that fan base hates our living guts right now, and that's okay. But, Joe, I still got to see what they look like offensively. Like, I still am high on Trinidad Chambliss. I think he's a Heisman watch list candidate. I think Kawan Lacy is a Heisman watch list candidate. You're replacing your entire offensive staff. That staff that helped lead you to a Final Four is gone. So how does John David do from a play-calling perspective? What do they look like offensively? Joe, are you 1,000% sure that they got the depth that they had at wide receiver last year? Although along the offensive line, I think that they could be fine. they still have question marks that they got to answer themselves too.
Right. I think that there are overall a lot of things that need to be answered from this game. The other game that I'm also intrigued by that I didn't have on my top three, still more interested in this game than the Notre Dame-Wisconsin game. Auburn and Baylor.
Yep, I agree. So we had the same top three. We had the exact same top.
They were my fourth team that was kind of like on the outside. Auburn and Baylor is very similar to a degree but on a smaller stage to what we talked about with Clemson and with LSU. You have Dave Aranda, who's done enough to save his job, but hasn't grown since that great beginning of his time at Baylor. And there's a wonder if he's maybe the next coach that's on the way out at the end of the season. You have Alex Golesh taking over with a completely new roster, a ton of new faces, mostly G5 guys that came over from USF. Is there a little bit of Cignetti effect here? Do they come out swinging? Does Byron Brown pop off? I mean, do you remember that game that Byron Brown had against Boise State?
I do.
Start the college football season. I mean, everybody was oohing and aahing and hooting and hollering over what he was doing on that Friday. I remember it was the Thursday or the Friday. I think it might have been the Thursday, actually. Everybody was freaking out seeing what he was doing because he was making play after play. He was running through dudes on Boise State. Does he do that? Does he captivate everybody on the opening day because there's no real big games? It's a real opportunity here. I'm really want to know how competitive Auburn's going to be this season. And I think that this is a good early opportunity to get a read for that. I know that Baylor is probably not the biggest challenge that you're going to get, but if this game ends up being close or they end up just straight up losing, I think that that's enough of a sign that it's going to be an uphill battle and it's going to be a developmental year.
These are another one of these games, and I feel like that we're going to do this all offseason until these teams start playing. What in the world are we supposed to expect with Auburn? What in the world do you think that we are supposed to expect with them? Because I don't know. Defensively, I think they're going to be really good. Like, I still believe that they are going to be a very good defense. I just don't know, because of everything that you're replacing, you're basically taking South Florida to Auburn. Joe, how are they going to replace all of this? Now, offensively, they stunk. And Brown has shown when he gets to moving and he gets to rolling that he can really get things happening here. I want to say that I think Auburn wins because I think their defense goes out there and does a lot of big time things, and they're able to just suffocate a team that probably athletically doesn't have the level of talent that Auburn can use up on them defensively. But Joe, I don't know what you want me to say about them on offense. Like, Byron Brown, can he have a Florida moment? I mean, he did some good things versus Miami. Sure. But I don't know if they're going to have the ability to run the football at will. I don't know if they have enough playmakers on the outside to be able to push the ball down the field. I don't know that. Again, you're taking South Florida to Auburn. Can Baylor do the unthinkable? I don't believe so, because I still think that this Auburn team is going to have to lean heavily on defense as Golesh continues to polish off what they're doing offensively.
Yeah, I agree with you that you're returning a lot of interesting talent, and defensively that kind of helped them win last year's matchup where they were able to smother Baylor a bit defensively. And that was what it was able to hold them off, despite Baylor having a pretty good offensive core. But Baylor is undergoing its own changes. They're undergoing their own reset with their roster and how they look. So are they even going to be capable of being truly competitive? I mean, heck, their best offensive player is going to be toting the rock for Auburn. Washington is the second running back behind Jeremiah Cobb in this running back duo. That's kind of the funniest part about this, is that the guy that we probably would have been talking about as a key piece for helping them win is on the other side of the ball right now. And it's funny how that worked out, that that's the first team that they're playing. Outside of that, though, were there any other games that like were really on your radar? Because
no.
I felt like I was picking it. I feel like there was like a lot of forced, like me trying to talk myself into some of these games. Like, is the SMU Florida State game one that we would buy into? Like, is that what we're like the best? All right.
So that's on my list.
Okay.
SMU and Florida State's on my list. However, what the hell is Florida State? I mean, like, maybe they can be competitive, but again, you're asking me, Gus Malzahn's not there. Like, I don't know what they're going to be offensively. They took one of his underlings and made him the offensive coordinator. I mean, I know that they've already announced their starting quarterback, but I mean, I think that game can be competitive and fun to watch. But are you 1,000% sold on, Joe, that Florida State's going to turn this thing around?
I think that for that question makes this game worth bringing up. Again, there's not very many great P4 on P4 games. But is it – how do I want to phrase this? Am I an ass for almost not – caring as much as I do about these other games? Am I an ass for thinking this isn't going to start well? I will say this. I am intrigued by the circumstance that we're not going to get the same thing that we did last year, where Florida State had enough easy opportunities to build momentum. And, you know, the Alabama game where they got thrown into the fire and they were able to open firing out the gate. We're also getting them thrown into the fire once again. We're forcing ourselves to find out. They're not probably the same. Actually, not probably. They're not the same level of opponent as Alabama was a year ago. But Kevin Jennings has proven to be a challenging player. We have proven that he is the type of guy that can absolutely knock you on your ass if you're not paying attention and you're not prepared. This could be the really quick, easy opportunity, Blake, to say, hey, we're done here. We're done here. How competitive do they look?
All right, here's where I am. I'm pulling up. Give me just a second. I'm trying to pull up Florida State's because I do a sorry, this is really bad podcasting. But yeah. Normally, here it is. I do a depth chart for everybody. Here's the thing with Florida State. They have a new left tackle, a new left guard, a new center. A new right tackle. They have a new tight end. They have a new quarterback. Now, can Trey Wisner be really good for them at running back? Deuce Robinson returns. I actually don't mind Ashton Daniels. I think Ashton Daniels, with given a better ability to start the season, that he would have been a lot better. Like this year, last year on defense, Lions win. Joe, they actually and ironically have a lot of really good pieces. They actually have a lot of really good talent. I don't know what to expect from that offensive line. I think they got good individualized pieces. I think Trey Wisner is a good running back. I think Ashton Daniels can really mess you up if you allow him to. We all like Deuce Robinson. We all like Boggs. We like what they have there. But, Joe, I cannot buy into Florida State right now. Joe, they have 10 wins the last two seasons. 10. And if Gus, let me just say it like this. If Gus Malzahn was there, I would feel a lot more comfortable about this being more of an intriguing game because Gus can call offense. I have no idea what to expect from them offensively. And if Mike Norvell is feeling the heat and feels like that he's got to be involve himself in play calling, they're going to get beat. By the way, we haven't even brought up at what we Joe, me and you are talking about Florida State. We haven't even brought up their opponent. So, do I think it can be competitive? Yes. Am I like I'm staying away from that game completely? This is a fanfare watch game. I ain't betting that game at all. Stay away from it.
I don't want to touch that. Nah. I don't want to touch that
again.
That's Florida a game State. You lose money on.
Yes. I mean, I would lean SMU coming down with the win. I'm guessing. I'm completely guessing because I have no idea what Florida State's going to be. And I don't trust Mike Norvell as far as I can throw him. So that's where I sit. All right. Let's move forward here. Joe, the College Sports Commission finally got some good news. They won an arbitration case. Not only did they win an arbitration case, guess who the attorney on record was? Jeffrey Kessler. If you remember Jeffrey Kessler, he's the attorney for the House settlement case. He's also, ironically, the attorney for Brendan Sorsby. But there was a situation in Nebraska where an NIL deal with Playfly in a multimedia rights deal that was paid to Nebraska. And in that, Nebraska was paying players through NIL, through Playfly, even though they received the money. This went into arbitration during the incident when the College Sports Commission denied the request. And in a federal court, in the court system, the College Sports Commission won the arbitration, saying that this did not fall into the House settlement guidelines. This does not end the entire situation here, because on May 27th, there is going to be another arbitration fight with Kessler and the College Sports Commission in the great state of California. I guess, Joe, when you look at this and see that the College Sports Commission won an arbitration, what are your thoughts? Is this starting to show that there is some protections and guardrails in place?
I have a feeling that you and I are not
going to California and they're going to lose.
No. I was going to say that you and I are not going to see eye to eye on this.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't be surprised, to your point, because Kessler sounded awfully confident in the article that was published in CBSSports.com about this. He seemed awfully confident that they were going to get their lick back when they came back around and the next court case comes around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong? And I know that you're going to tell me yes. Am I wrong for thinking that this is a good thing? Am I wrong for thinking that Nebraska, I originally was on their side, but the more that I read into this, I can't find a way to defend them. Nebraska was trying to find an effective way to skirt new NIL rules that require there to be some sort of an activation with a player's name, image, and likeness. They went through Playfly. Playfly was determined to be an associated entity. The argument here is that Playfly, that Kessler's trying to support, is not an associated entity. I think that if you're going to have, like it was determined in this case, that there was not a clear utilization of these players' name, image, and likeness, that this was a pay-for-play inducement. We are in a world now where there is revenue sharing. With revenue sharing, there shouldn't be a need to do things like this. If you are sharing revenue with players, NIL deals need to have some sort of value. So when they were paying these guys, the deals under scrutiny were worth more than $1 million combined. When you're paying as much as they were for these players, they need to be doing something. This is the whole thing that I've been saying. It's pretty cut and dry. The CSC requires it to go through the scrutiny that it did in order to prove, was said player doing something with their NIL? Were they doing something with their representation, their name? Were they doing something to promote something?
Yeah, they were on
the school.
Tom, they were on the podcasts. So in fairness, they were, remember the Rule podcast presented by Playfly?
Yes.
So they were actually doing something, just for clarity there.
They weren't doing enough to justify what they were getting paid is the situation that we're coming here. One of the words that was used in this is they were warehousing their NIL rights, which is they were just paying them to have access to them, which is not okay if it is an associated entity. I just think that this is one of the most cut and dry circumstances. The more that I dug into it, and when I was doing my notes on this last night, I was just sitting there thinking, I wanted to defend Nebraska because I hate the CSC, but is it really wrong to look at this and think Nebraska had the rules in front of them and they were trying to test them, and they got told no. To be perfectly clear here though, Blake, before I throw it back to you, this isn't a situation where the CSC found Nebraska to have violated some serious rules and that they're going to be under NCAA investigation. That's not what this is. I'm not calling Nebraska dirty. I'm not doing any of that. Just do a better job. They have the opportunity to resubmit the deals and just have them do more stuff, like actually get their money's worth out of what they're being paid. So I think that this is a good thing, Blake, because the CSC does need power. And the way that you get power is by winning a case like this.
So, okay. Let's go through this, okay? Because I think that I don't actually disagree with you, okay? I know you thought I was going to. I don't. What this situation entails is a situation where Playfly was playing Nebraska or paying Nebraska for media rights, multimedia rights. Nebraska takes that money to then pay the players. What they were trying to do was expand their TV revenue money. Let's call it what it is. Okay. Yep. That's what they were doing. That is against the rules. That 1000% is against the rules. You know that, and I know that. So I believe that the arbitration worked in this instance for what it was in the House settlement case was supposed to intend. I think they did win the right in the right way. I don't know why you thought I would disagree with you, but they were trying to use a back door to pay players more to be able to give more money to players to get a better roster. That was not how they intended. What they should have done is they should have had their own specific deal with Playfly, and Playfly should have then gone to the players for NIL deals. I also agree with you, the Matt Rhule podcast, you're not doing $1 million worth of content, much less you're not getting the views for $1 million worth of views. I will give an example on something. You and I have been in this business for a while. Like, for example, we do over in season, we do well over 1 million views. Okay. Well over per month. We do well over per month. Yep. Joe, their rate, and the judge did not rule on this, by the way. The judge did not give a rate if the rate was actually accurate. They did not determine that. But that is so far out of the norm to pay players millions of dollars for their rights when, Joe, they're not even touching the right numbers to what is industry standard. So, no, I 1,000% agree with you. I think that this is 1,000% the case that should have happened. Where I have come after the CSC has been in a situation where they went after LSU. They went after other teams and schools for like a $500 thing and say they didn't file documentation. Like, I still believe, even though Urban Meyer comes out here and says that collectives are bad, well, collectives are a third-party entity. And so you're going to have to govern the collective. If the collective for a specific school is not making players do what is required of them, then attack the specific collective. So I think that in this specific case, I'm not saying that they were trying to cheat, but as you stated, but it does come off in a way that you kind of did try to cheat.
Well, I mean, hold on. I didn't say that.
No, that's they were trying to, no, but they were. They saw a loophole. They were trying to backdoor the loophole, and it got shot down. I mean, it's exactly what happened here. Like, there's no like black and white kind of situation of what they were trying to do. I mean, there's no gray area in what they were trying to do. They received the money. They tried to pay the players. It was, got caught up in arbitration, and you lost. I mean, that's, I mean, it's, to me, it comes down as cut and dry that you were trying to backdoor a situation. Probably should stop saying backdoor, but you're trying to backdoor a situation and you got caught for it.
And I think that ultimately why I'm in, shockingly, I'm surprised that I've been so supportive of this, is that you do need obvious cut and dry victories, big victories, for the CSC in order for it to be able to do its job. That is why I think a lot of people, including us on this show, were really freaking annoyed over the granular nickel and diming of the specific situations you mentioned, the documentation issues. When you're turning down deals over like the littlest things because you're trying to establish your power at the very beginning of this, it comes off as annoying. Now that there is this clear circumstance where multiple players' arbitration cases were put together into one case, you have a clear precedent. You have a clear past example to prove, hey, you tried to do the same thing as the Nebraska circumstance. That got shot down. So therefore, yours is getting shot down as well. And if it goes to arbitration in those situations, the arbiter will have the ability to look at the past resolution unless they wanted to reverse what that was. It is worth noting that the big bit that Kessler is going to be going after in the separate case that is specific to the house settlement is that he is going to try and argue that the multimedia rights companies like Playfly are not associated entities. Because the separate thing here is,
correct,
you know, if Nike came along, just for a random example, and they offered 2 to 3 players at Texas a deal for their name, image, and likeness, and they didn't activate it, they're allowed to warehouse their rights. They're allowed to hold on to that and just pay a contract in order to prevent Adidas or Reebok or New Balance from coming along and offering them contracts if just we'll eventually use them when we're ready to. What they do doesn't matter because it couldn't be more blatantly obvious that they're not an associated entity. But the problem is when there's a clear connection between an in-house media group that you're not in-house, but a media entity that you're paying to produce content for you, it is going to look really blatantly obvious. I don't know why Kessler is so stuck on this. I think that Kessler has bigger battles to fight. And I don't know why that is the one that he's trying to protect the players for. Because it seems pretty clear and obvious what teams are going to try and do with this.
Who pays him to go to these arbitrations? That's why.
The player. I actually don't really know specifically where his money
comes out. I'm assuming that Nebraska was the one that hired him in this situation. Because they went to arbitration, not the...
I don't know if Kessler was the lawyer.
Yeah, Kessler was the lawyer in this situation. Kessler also has.
I don't know if we have that. I'm saying I don't know if we have the information on who hired him and whatnot.
Oh,
or did he just self-involve himself?
Very well could have. I don't know. The May 27th case in California is going to tell all, because if he wins that one, which is going to be more lenient on him, all hell's going to break loose. Because you know what that opens up? Let me tell you, just so while we're talking about this, you know what that opens up for, right?
What?
Private equity. So if third parties can come in and say, hey, LSU, Notre Dame, I'm going to give you $25 million so that you can pay the players for multimedia rights deals. And nothing comes of it? You mean to tell me that private equity won't go around doing that? They already tried.
Yeah.
What do you think Playfly is doing? What do you think Playfly's ultimate game here in with Texas A&M, LSU, Nebraska? What do you think their end game is? What's their end game? There's not enough multimedia rights for the amount of money that you're spending. They're not putting out the views through Playfly that deserves that level of money. So what's their end game? I do think that, unfortunately, this could open up a very bad situation, Joe, where this allows, if this May 27th case happens, that people in private equity would love to come in and start taking hold of some college sports situations.
I do wonder if this does end up creating some sort of a backdoor, because the survival and the continued involvement with entities like this does create opportunities for more private equity involvement. I almost am always deathly afraid to even go down that rabbit hole.
Well,
I hate the private equity involvement, the potential involvement.
Well, I mean, don't you think it's more plausible that they would try? Because if you're given a situation, Joe, where these associated entity deals are approved, what's an associated entity? Why wouldn't Notre Dame or LSU go out to an associated entity and say, hey, we'll give you the multimedia rights deals for all of our stuff and all of our players for $25 million to relieve the burden of them having to use the TV revenue money? I mean, it's an open door now. It's an open door. You know what Notre Dame's going to be called? The Ruffino and Joe show, okay. Fighting Irish.
I don't know if we'll have enough money for that.
We ain't got enough money for that. All right, let's move on here. Joe, we continue on our path of these deep dives. We have now gotten to your favorite team in the SEC, because you keep talking about them, you keep talking about them, you keep talking about them.
And all right.
Here, you have been very high on the Kentucky Wildcats. You think that this team can upset some people. You're in love with Will Stein and what they are starting to build in year one in Lexington. What are your thoughts going into the 2026 season between Kentucky and the rest of the SEC? I don't know why I was saying it like that, but what are your thoughts of Kentucky? Because you have been so high on them. I'm just going to sit here and listen.
Look, this Kentucky squad, there is a justified reason to look at this team and talk about them as a sleeper. Now, I'm not saying that they are a sleeper that is going to go on to win the conference. I'm not saying that this is a sleeper to even win 9 games. I think that this is more to the degree that in year one under Will Stein, they can go 7-5 with a pretty tough schedule, might I add, and knock off some of these teams that many would assume would be easy victories for their opponents. Like, the buy-in for me comes from not the returning pieces. We've got 5 returning starters. That's one of the lowest in the country. Mykese Humphrey-Grace is one guy that I'm paying attention to because he was really freaking good at South Dakota as an underclassman. He transferred up to Kentucky. A lot of people are keeping an eye on him from a draft prospect perspective because he's pretty explosive. But they have this core of dudes that they brought in the transfer portal that I think have a lot of potential, if they mesh quickly, to do some serious damage. These guys, I remember when they entered the portal, and if you weren't paying attention, you kind of forgot, and then you went back and looked at the portal outcomes where the top guys landed, and you're going and scrolling through, it kind of felt like, oh, I forgot that he ended up at Kentucky. I think that Lance Hurd's one of the best offensive linemen that they've had in some time. I think that C.J. Baxter deserves a lot more recognition for what he is as a former 5-star. If he's back to full health and he's back to normal, how can he play this upcoming year? There were a lot of people that were comparing him to Joe Mixon as a true freshman before he had that season-ending injury as a sophomore. I think that C.J. Baxter is one of their biggest catalysts. But Blake, as a Notre Dame fan, I do think that Kenny Minchie has potential to work in this Will Stein offense and for Will Stein to be able to turn this team into an efficient, reliable, and explosive offense. That's where the buy-in is. Can this core of new faces do a ton of damage in the SEC because Will Stein is that good of an offensive play caller. But I think that there are a lot of reasons to get excited about this because they brought in guys that were blue chip talented players in some degrees that needed second chances, or some of which that they were just straight up able to steal, that I think could be really, really good players for them.
So I look at Kentucky and say, boy, what a brand new world it is. For over more than a decade, Mark Stoops has ran the Kentucky Wildcats, and let's just be honest, probably the most success that they've had in their football tenure was under Mark Stoops. When NIL in the portal became a thing, Mark Stoops started having issues. You didn't put the money where you really needed to. Now, you started giving him some, but not a lot. Now you bring in Will Stein and you definitely want to put in the money to bring in a program and be high flying and do a lot of really good things in Lexington. Joe, they are the most I keep saying this because I think Florida is really intriguing. They are one of the more intriguing teams in the SEC. What is Kenny Minchie? What is this offensive line? Joe, they went out and got four new offensive linemen. They went out and got C.J. Baxter and Barnes at the running back position. They were, six guys along the offensive line, four new guys starting. You have Will Stein calling plays with Joe Sloan, which Will Stein's going to be able to end that. But the question I have here is that are all of these really talented pieces that you're bringing on the offense going to be able to coincide with a wide receiver room that might be not so great? Joe, they have a lot of production. I mean, a lot of potential, but not a lot of production. Nick Anderson was not able to come back to form after injury, after injury, after injury. Being in Oklahoma, being at LSU, now going to Kentucky following Joe Sloan. Does he finally turn it up? Is he finally back healthy? I don't know. But you have a lot of guys there that have a lot of potential, but I don't know if they have a lot of production to what the SEC is going to be untold here. Joe, on the defensive side of things, they didn't lose a lot of players. Actually, a lot of players stayed. But Kentucky, even though I think we look at Kentucky and say, well, they brought in Lance Erd, they brought in Kenny Minchie, they brought in Will Stein, they brought in C.J. Baxter, they brought in Nick Anderson. Well, what if C.J. Baxter isn't able to play up to the level that he was before the injury? What if Nick Anderson isn't able to play up to the ability that he was before the injury? He couldn't even do it at LSU a year out of it. I think that they have a lot of massive names. And because it's Kentucky and we see that they've done good in the portal, we're like, well, man, they might be able to do some good things. My question to you would be, even on the defensive side of the football, they have a lot of nice talent, hardly no production. How do I translate? Are we looking at this and saying, well, Kentucky had a really good portal class, and because it's Kentucky, we boost them up a little bit more? Versus, what is the actual reality of what they can do in the season? Because I look at them and say, I think Kenny Minchie can be good. I think Lance Erd's a big-time deal for you to be able to get, even though I kind of feel like he was pushed out at Tennessee because they wanted him to move to right tackle and David Sanders to be at left. You got six new offensive linemen. I don't know if your receiver core and receiving guys that you brought in are going to be able to extend to that next level. You got a lot of defensive pieces that are talented but have no true real production in the SEC. My question will be, are we elevating Kentucky more than what they need to be because we're not used to Kentucky football doing some of the things that they did in the portal? Are they actually going to be a team that people are not going to want to play because they're a tough, downhill, gritty team with a really good play caller?
Well, I think that both things can be true here is that there is going to be a little bit of inflation in our expectations because we're not used to Kentucky having some of these players that they brought in. To be able to go and get some of the bigger names in the transfer portal, especially along the offensive line. To have a quarterback who was highly sought after that you were able to pluck away from Nebraska. I think the biggest reason why, though, I think people should be talking about this team is the coaching staff that they have. I really, really do think.
Even with Joe Sloan?
Well, Joe Sloan's a separate conversation. Will Stein, I think, is one of the most underrated coaches in college football, first year head coaches. He was transformative for taking their offense to being really good under Kenny Dillingham to consistently dominant. The string of guys that he sent to the Heisman podium is nuts. It's unbelievable. Can he do something like that with Kenny Minchie? Not to send him to the Heisman podium, but can he be a leader in passing yardage in the SEC? Can he be top three? I think it's totally plausible. And then to steal Jay Bateman is one of the most underrated parts about this whole thing, where I don't think we talked about it enough, quite frankly, that they were able to get him from Texas A&M after they were as defensively dominant as they were a year ago. To get Jay Bateman to lead your defense in year one, that I think could be really massive for this team as you're trying to figure out what is this defensive core end up looking like? What are they capable of doing? Most of their returning production, even though it's very minimal, is on the defensive side of the ball. Again, I don't think that this team is going to go 9-3. I just don't think that they're going to be a doormat. I think that there is going to be, as when we look at the schedule in a second, there's going to be a game that we're going to be saying in the middle of the year, holy hell, did you see what Kentucky did?
Do you want to get to their schedule?
Yeah, let's read off.
Okay. Let's get to Kentucky's schedule. Let's read it off here.
All right. Youngstown State, they open up with, and they get Alabama at Texas A&M versus South Florida, at South Carolina versus LSU, at Oklahoma versus Vandy, at Tennessee, Florida, at Missouri, and then they host Louisville. Now, the thing that really sucks about the schedule, currently ranked games against A&M on the road, Oklahoma, and Tennessee. Those are all ranked games. So I wonder if there's a theoretical possibility that they shock Alabama at home in week two. Is there the theoretical possibility that, you know, maybe Missouri is good this upcoming year and they knock them off and they knock them out of being a ranked team? I think that they can beat Kentucky, or they can beat Vanderbilt. I think that there is a capability for them to beat Vandy. It's a hard schedule, Blake. I'm not gonna lie to you. To have the games that they do, where there's only really two games that I can say should be must easy wins, and Louisville being the last one that they could end up knocking off Louisville, it's gonna require a lot for them to go 7-5. But there are chances here. There's absolutely chances.
All right. This is why I wanted to kind of end that conversation and get to the schedule.
Okay.
I don't think they can beat Bama. I don't think they can go on the road and beat A&M. Uh-uh. I really don't know if they can go on the road and beat South Carolina, because I'm a little bit higher on South Carolina with the Kendall Briles move. I know that the game again for LSU will be difficult to go into Lexington. It's always difficult for them for whatever reason. I don't know if they beat LSU. I don't think that they can go into Oklahoma and win. I'm going to skip the Tennessee teams because I don't really know what Vandy or Tennessee, because the quarterback situation is going to be. I don't think they can beat Florida. I think John Summerall is going to – I'm kind of higher on Florida. And what is Missouri? I mean, what is Ahmad Hardy's status? Mm-hmm. Because if Ahmad Hardy's status is fine and Austin Simmons – is doing what he needs to do, I don't know if they can go into Missouri and win that one. I think this might be a 4-8 team.
No.
Hold on.
6-6.
But I do agree with you. I think there's going to be some teams on the schedule that they upset. I don't think that they're close to being a playoff team, but I think that they're going to be scrappy. I think they can beat South Carolina. I mean, that's something, because South Carolina plays up and down. I mean, Florida, we really don't know what Florida is, and that game's at home. You have Vanderbilt and Tennessee. If that quarterback situation isn't ready to go, they can beat them too. But I just don't see them beating Bama, A&M, LSU, or Florida for that matter, really, I mean, if you're asking me, and if you want to switch Florida with Missouri, fine, then do it. And I don't think I'm program watching. You know, Joe, me and you came up with a saying a while back, logo watching. I don't think I'm doing that. I just don't know if they're going to be able to overcome what is going to be a very brutal schedule for them.
I think that I know understand.
You're high on them. I know you're high.
Hold on. I'm not some like.
You put them in your 12-team playoffs.
Okay, that didn't happen. I'm not trying to unrealistically pitch them. For them to go 7-5, they would need to pull off some ridiculous upsets. I don't think it's super likely. I think that they can go 6-6 because I think that amongst these, there are a couple of teams on here that I think are on shaky ground, like South Carolina. Vandy's not on shaky ground, but they're resetting a little bit. So I think that they could surprise Vandy. Tennessee's on shaky ground. Missouri is beatable. And I think that Florida is resetting entirely under Summerall. If they could pulling some of those wins, then there is a 6-6 season there with a potential to upset one of these teams that overlooks them. But it would require a lot. It would require a lot of things going their way. I think that there's a lot more of a case to be made for other teams in the SEC to go 4-8 compared to Kentucky this upcoming year because they did a good job of bringing in talent. But we'll see if that can actually capably come to fruition.
I guess we'll see. All right. Joe, great show. Any super chats that are off in here?
Yeah. One.
Elks, who's been a member for 9 months, says they stripped sleeves are back on for Ohio State. Also, another reminder that Big Noon Kickoff stinks, and we can't read that. Ding dong. We can't read. How are you guys doing? Elks, you're going to have to be a little bit more PG from now on.
Yeah. Yeah, you get no more curse words in the super chats. Surprised that those go through. Surprised that YouTube doesn't. There's no way to censor that. I don't. I get that you're upset about the noon kickoff thing, but it's more of a Big Ten issue, if anything. I do like the striped sleeves, though. I think that was a good move. They got to bring those back.
I agree. All right, we'll see y'all on Sunday. Y'all have a great day. Peace.